The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Weekend Edition's back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Elijah Herbel. We are ready to get after it. It is spring football 2020. Scott Frost, his press conference, assistant coaches, a handful of players on Monday. We'll dive headfirst into that as we get you cranked up. And lots to get into. Can join us this morning. Numbers to dial in, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com, Mark at HaleVarsity.com. Give us a follow and reach out on Twitter if you want. Chris Schmidt at Schmidt underscore radio. At Mark Skurs for Mark Kranak, and at Herbal Essences for Elijah Herbel. We'll talk a little bit about Spielman. That was the bombshell dropped on Monday. Nebraska has several questions to answer as they look towards building a team that is competitive in the Big Ten West and Big Ten overall, and absolutely competitive when it comes to being a factor in postseason football. Kranak, a lot to get into this morning, and we'll start off with Spielman before we dive into some position groups that are really, really intriguing. Your best player off in Minnesota, you hope you get him back in the summer. Time will tell. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. It's look, they left the door open for him, but doesn't look right. And you know what it does is it cements it further. I don't know. You look at the attrition from classes 16, 17, and 18, right? Yep. 2016, 2017, 2018. I tweeted about this a couple days ago. You are now looking at 59% of those signees, 59% aren't even on the roster. They're not either. When Nebraska opens spring ball, only 41% of the people they signed across 3 years. Put this in perspective. They signed 66 players, right? 27 are left. Nebraska signed 28 guys just last year alone.
Wow.
Like, you, from three classes, you have the size of last year's class. It's... So when we're going to hear, and we inevitably will, well, we're a young team. Oh, we're young. It's true. Now, how did you get to that point? Why are so many people transferring all the time? Is it just because of difference of types of kids that you would recruit? Probably. But it's worth watching, right? Like, doesn't that concern you in some way?
Here's the beer half full, the beer half empty on that. All right, and I'm going to go back to a team Nebraska's kind of split with since they've gotten into the Big Ten. It started off okay, and then it's been kind of back and forth with a win here or there against them, and that's Minnesota. All right, you look at Fleck, and you look at what he did. And it's an apples and oranges discussion when it comes to inheritance. And before you scream at your radio about inheritance, about, well, it's your team, you coach who you got. And yes, I get that. But Fleck has he thinned the herd quite a bit his first 2 years, man. And last year, Minnesota was an extremely young football team. His second year, a very young football team. He brought in his own guys. He thinned out a roster that was, and a program that was regularly finishing top three or four in the Big Ten West, regularly going 8-4, 8-5, 9-4 with Dilly Bar there in the Holiday Bowl win before they blew him out. and you play young guys. So that means you do two things. One, you evaluate and you go close on some dudes that you think are more college ready. Can you come in and by your redshirt freshman year, can you step up and do your thing? You got a year to get bigger, stronger, faster. By year two in your college career, can you come in and kick ass? We'll see. The other part of it is you reach for some JUCOs, and you also need to hit on a transition class. You've outlined part of that recruiting span, 16, 17, 18. Well, 17 and 18, two of those are on Coach Frost's tab, and he did the right thing by staying with his Central.
18 only is. Only 18 is.
Thank you. Thanks for that correction. Thank you.
No, it's fine. It gets confusing with the signing period.
Right. 18, 19 is the 2 years of Scott, right? And then the 20 class. So the point is you have to go in and make evaluations with what you got, what you need. And, yeah, you're a young football team. How quickly can you get guys up to speed? And how quickly can you be right with bringing guys that are ready to come in and contribute immediately? Brother, it takes time on the offensive and defensive line, which is where you're going to win in this conference, to get guys ready. Not just from a strength and conditioning standpoint, but from a mentality, right? And then, by the way, go out there and win the ball game in the trenches. So. It's not a fast process, and when this thing got reset, there were a lot of folks out there saying, you know, it might be year four, year five till it pops, and that looks more realistic versus you look at Fleck and his year three last year, which they got a little help with how things were scheduled. They still won a lot of ball games, credit to them, but it can work. And now we'll see if Nebraska, with a completely different schedule, we'll see if these young guys are ready to go. A lot of the guys, this is year three in their system, but it might be year one of their first major contributions beyond a special teams unit.
Well, and a lot of what I'm saying is a lot of those guys that would have been three-year guys so far in Frost's system aren't gone. There. They're not there. Dude, and the 16, 17, 18 classes would be your upperclassmen. Obviously. So some of those guys, by the way, is not, it's, you know, some of them, like one of them's Lamar Jackson. The guy never redshirted and he just graduated. Right. So like, but he's an exception.
Been a transfer deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Some. Right. Yeah. Others maybe graduated early. Right. Cause they were JUCO transfers in or something.
Sure.
But by and large, you know, 59% of what would be your upperclassmen aren't going to be there in the spring. And it's crazy. That means that you are completely reliant on all the younger players. Not completely, but and by the way, here's how important upperclassmen are. Everybody from the 16 class that remains, they're starters. All of them. It's Stilley, it's Colin Miller, it's Jack Stoll. I'm sorry, I just missed that. What?
Dismuke.
Right.
Hymus.
They're all starters.
Yeah, Hymus.
It's the offensive line, yeah.
Yeah, if they're not Farniok, if they're not starters, they're like heavily in the rotation.
Right.
Right. So it just goes to show, you know what I mean? The upperclassmen, the older guys, they're important to a team. But Nebraska's only got eight of them. They got eight seniors from that class. And after J.D. Spielman left, it just highlighted exactly what Frost is dealing with. And so if you believe that Nebraska needs to win by being a development program, like if you believe that, I believe that. Not everybody does.
That's how you've done it.
Right.
You've been a development program with sprinkling in some stars.
Yep. Well, then if you believe that, it's going to be a couple years. It's just flat out. Like, it just is.
Well,
it's going to take another couple years.
And I think the other part to highlight on that timeline is what your schedule is. I mean, if you got a break like Minnesota did, where very manageable schedule. And again, credit to them, they won their games, okay? But, I mean, they got their non-conference games a year ago where they eked out a 3-0 start, but it worked out well. They were ready for Nebraska. That blew up their confidence in a good way. Then they go into Penn State, hot as all get out, win that game. All right, come back to earth a little bit, close loss at Iowa, and then, you know, it was revenge time by old Badger Bucky, who just, you know, dismantled him. And then Minnesota lost their bowl game, didn't they?
They're playing Florida, right?
I got to double check that.
That's down in the Outback Bowl.
The November, the meat of their schedule, when it got, like, consecutively tough,
yeah,
they were more of a 500 program.
Totally. Okay. Similar to Nebraska in 16. Right.
Right. I mean, you had a 7-0 start. You played your ass off against Wisconsin, lost in overtime. Ohio State did bad things to you. Iowa did, you know, you just faded. When it got tougher, you faded. I think when you get into the developmental part you're touching on, Nebraska always wants to be a strong fourth quarter team. Well, there's a fourth quarter part of the season, too. So, yeah, I mean, back to the patience and development side of things and how important this spring is, because you got production to replace. Whether Spielman's back or not, you got to replace his yards and what it was going to bring to your offense, because it was the biggest part of your consistency when you had it.
Look, you just hit on something really important, you know, because we will analyze matchups and we will talk about this position group and that position group. But, man, when the game is tight, you need a dude. Right? You look at Illinois last year, Illinois game. That thing was tight. That was individual efforts by Adrian Martinez, by Wandale, by JD.
Yes.
That's right? I mean, those guys.
Ball,
like,
game, yeah.
They made plays. Like,
they made tough plays. They made plays after somebody went pinata on their kidneys over the middle. So, yeah. I mean, that's big. But you need you mentioned these eight or nine guys that are remaining, that are still standing, that have been part of this thing. When it gets to be tight, when it gets to be a one possession game, how are they going to be? What's their record been in tight ball games? They've won a few, Michigan State, Northwestern. They've lost a lot, and that's not a shot at them. It's just a reality. Can Nebraska better be a better close game team? And that can come down to players executing, but that also comes down to coaching.
Well, and experience and all that. There's a lot that feeds into that. Nebraska's not going to have a ton, you know. They're just not. And so, again, if you believe it's a developmental program, it is going to be a couple years, and prepare yourself accordingly. Because you can't have it both ways.
I like the patience shown by Coach Frost, though. To redshirt. It's okay to redshirt. It's okay to have a philosophy where in this 4 year, this four game deal's been very helpful. I mean, it's a quick cup of coffee for guys to, you know, face some live bullets and then build off of that. I'm good with the approach they're taking. Look at the options you have that are redshirts, and I think of a guy like Ty Robinson. I mean, I think of a guy like Ty Robinson and what he can become in the middle part of that defensive line, where you still have a Daniels and you still have a Keem Green, okay? You look at a guy like Stilley that he's left standing. You're waiting on DeAndre Thomas, who's been part of the program, redshirted, really changed his body. He wants to get after it. You got the linebacking core that you're – to your point, there's a lot of young people with a Colin Miller that needs to lead the group, okay? And on the offensive line, I'm fine when I got a couple of guys like a Hymus and a Farniok that have been and seen about everything. You might have a position switch here by Farniok if Ben Hart's ready at right tackle to go to guard for Farniok. I mean, it could work out where Nebraska is going to still take some lumps, but get better. And then then you'll when it happens, it's going to pop because you're going to have depth, you're going to have talent, you're going to have experience.
Well,
thanks to the redshirting and the developmental part, and you just got to kind of ride it out.
Now, Brandon Vogel wrote about this a while ago, and he studied Nebraska's attrition rate from, I think, 2000 to 2014. Long period, mm-hmm. all about coaching upheaval. And Nebraska's attrition rate per class was around 40%.
Okay.
Right? Which is already really high compared to most colleges. And his theory was, well, the further kids are away from home, the more likely they are to transfer back.
That right? happens, yep.
Yep. And then you compare that to, say, he compared it, I think it was 2014 or 15, to all the Power 5 conference champions. Their four-year attrition rate was something like 21%.
So you double that.
Right. So Nebraska's recruiting classes were twice as likely to attrit at them teams that were winning conference championships. Right. So you already have that. Nebraska's already going to naturally have higher attrition. This three-year section of class 16, 17, 18 is high by even those standards. You know, it's 59. So if you're going to be a developmental program, you need players in the system to develop. Right. You can't have a revolving door. The 18 class, that's the transition class for Frost. That's what he got here like December 6th. Uh-huh. You know, he's still coaching the bowl game. And that's the first year of the early signing period. Signs 25 players. 14 of them are gone. They're not even here. Okay, so don't worry about like how many of that class are going to be star. Over half of them aren't even in Lincoln anymore.
Right.
So you throw that away. 18 class, you just basically have to throw away. You got Adrian Martinez out of it. You got some good players out of it.
Yeah, but Juergens. Yeah.
14 are like in another zip code. So the 19 class, that's Wandale.
Mm-hmm.
And his crew has to be like your foundation. That has to be your foundational class. Most of those guys redshirted, right? Which means they're going to be coming up. We're talking about I think there's 28 of those players. Only two of them are gone. Darian Chase and Desmond Bland never got here.
Okay.
Right. So that has to be your, but you're talking about redshirt freshmen and you're talking about a developmental program. So it ain't going to pop this year, brother.
No, it'll be tough. But to your point about
maybe not even next year
being a developmental program, you were able to go get the guy that can come in and perform. I mean, we talk about Spielman's production. Where's Nebraska at last year without Wandale?
Oh, it's huge.
And he was a true freshman, good as advertised, came in, balled out, ran it, caught it. And was a monster. I don't worry about Nebraska being able to identify and get some of those guys that can be early contributors
and retain them.
Yeah, well,
that's the other thing.
Right now, the two of the earlier contributors they've air quote retained. I mean, I know Adrian didn't have a great year last year, but I think he played tough. He's been an early contributor. Clearly, Wandale's been an early contributor. Juergens, I would say, has been an early contributor. So
it is worth watching. This is not a thing where I'm not at the point yet where I'm like, man, Frost and his staff cannot keep players.
Because
transitional, right? Like,
are you okay though? If you're weeding out or guys just say, man, this. Back to the old state slogan, it's not for everybody.
totally. Yeah.
If they're not going to help the team, if they're not bought in, if they're grumbling, then see ya.
Well, we're 3 years on, though. You'd think they'd be able to weed out the guys faster than 3 years. Is it still weeding out at this point?
Well, some point, guys are like, it's not for me. Or they're just not at the level they need to be.
Or
what's your commitment level?
Or... I think a bunch of things can be true at the same time.
Okay.
That can be true. It is also true that we should not ignore that there's a revolve. There's been a revolving door.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
And I think you start sort of your judgment of the staff's ability to recruit and retain players, keep them on the roster. That judgment's, I think, should start with the 19 class.
And right now, your batting average is pretty good because you've lost.
But they've only been here a year. They've only been here a year.
Gotcha.
Right. So, you know, the whole writing on the wall kind of situations haven't happened yet with a lot of those guys.
Well, and they haven't been recruited over yet.
It's worth watching. Mm-hmm. And the 19 class was truly a class where the staff got to plan ahead for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the 18 class, they just had to find dudes.
Yeah.
You know, so you can explain some of that stuff away, but we're negligent if we ignore it. You can't ignore it. You have to like say, huh, I'm going to keep an eye on that. Like that is a potential warning sign of bad things, but not going to hit the panic button yet. But we're idiots if we don't keep track of that.
So my back to the Minnesota example, were they just lucky, right? Better at development, great buy-in. I'm asking about their winning based, you know, compared to their attrition rate. Because he flipped the roster big time. And I'll say this, walking into a Riley culture and trying to change that, and now people are sick of hearing about culture, da, da, da. But it's true, man. If you got bad attitudes and bad apples that are still hanging on and not moving the thing forward, that slows you down. It's different walking into a place that Jerry Kill built up, all right, and was rolling really at a high level since the Glenn Mason years versus where you're walking into to back-to-back four-win seasons or whatever the hell was going on. And this isn't to set Riley and those guys on fire. I mean, they've won games. They're good dudes. It's not that they can't coach. It just was their philosophy sure as hell didn't work in the Big Ten.
The analogy you're using here is like if you're going and building a house. Minnesota's house is already half built. Mm-hmm. Nebraska's house is just burnt down. You still have to go clean up all the rubble and then go build your house up, right?
Well, you got bamboos and windows. I mean, Fleck went off on that for about 3 minutes this week. But I'm just saying, if Minnesota can do it, you would hope Nebraska can get it done.
Look, Minnesota started off 4-0. They finished 11-2 last year. They started off 4-0, but you remember those games were tight.
Yeah.
Really tight. Like, so they beat South Dakota State by a touchdown. It took double overtime for Fresno State, a field goal win over Georgia Southern,
touchdown
win over Purdue. And then they got hot. They had a nice little run. Nebraska was at the bottom of that, where they played Illinois, Nebraska, Rutgers, Maryland.
Sure.
And steamrolled all those teams. They got a break in the schedule too.
I point to the Penn State moment in time where they forced three turnovers inside the red zone. Penn yep. State was awful on offense where Penn State should have won by two touchdowns. Minnesota found a way to get the football back.
Yeah, 31-26 there.
Mm-hmm.
But the week before they lost to Iowa, the next week they got stomped by Wisconsin. They win their bowl game over Auburn.
Okay,
so yeah. But that was year three. And I'm sorry, but year two was not very good for Minnesota.
It was up and down.
Year two is not very good for Nebraska.
Year two, they at least beat Wisconsin on the road and gave them some momentum into year three.
Yeah. Nebraska crushed Minnesota. Remember, and they
was
changed
awesome.
Everything after that.
That was the, yeah, well, they blew out his defensive coordinator, and they settled, yeah. They settled then.
Nebraska's got a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I'm excited about Lubick. I'm excited about special teams. You've got some guys that need to get here this summer to fully complement your offense.
Why? Because you only have four scholarship receivers for the spring?
Back to your point about numbers and developmental program.
Four.
Jimmy Walden said it best, the old Iowa State and Washington State coach, our friend, the old quarterback for Devaney. It's either 5-year or 5-star, baby. I mean, that's what it is. You get a 5-star, you can win quickly and early. Or you get a 5-year deal where you get 5 years to build a player up and then go do it again and hope you're right.
The team is going to transform, especially if Xavier Betts and Omar Manning
get here.
Are ready to go.
Uh-huh.
If they're ready to go and they can really play, the team is going to be so drastically different
Sure.
From what you see in the spring versus what you could see in the fall.
Well,
drastically different.
We'll get into some offensive line talk next. The rewind with an All-American and All-Conference performer, Dr. Rob Zadiska.
You ask him about coronavirus? Or?
I did not.
Why not? Do you have a medical professional and you didn't even...
I am over the coronavirus. I know it's growing. I know more people are catching it.
It just came to Nebraska. You
know
yeah.
No, it can stay away. I'm not in a mask right now. I don't have gloves on. Come get me.
Did you just taunt the coronavirus?
I taunted. It's a 15-yard penalty in the end zone. I did something unsavory.
You just said, come at me, bro, to a virus.
Hey, there's enough vodka in town to make sure it stays away.
Jeez.
We'll talk to Rob Zadiska, part of the Rewind, next. Brandon Vogel joins us at 8. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, is back. Great to be with you as we kick off Spring Preview 2020 for Nebraska. And it's here on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. We say hi to a Husker Hall of Famer, All-American, All-Conference, part of the pipeline, Rob Zadiska, with us to preview the Nebraska offensive line. Spring ball just around the corner for 2020. Dr. Rob, good sir, how are you?
I'm well. How are you guys doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm glad there's a little sunshine, and it actually feels like, you know, spring for spring ball. And you linemen, though, never needed that. You guys always went sleeveless, right?
We didn't care. It didn't matter what time of year it was.
That's good. You know, I want to start off with your impressions last year of the offensive line. What do you think the group did best?
Oh, boy. Sorry.
No, that's all right.
Kind of a big pause there when you asked that question is probably a bit of an answer. You know, that's a hard one to answer because they were very okay at a lot of stuff.
Sure.
It's not like it was one of these situations where you're watching games and you're going, wow, man, these guys can pass block forever. I mean, you just can't get a blitz on them. You can't. Martinez has all day to throw. I mean, you can't really say that about him. It's not like you watched a game and thought to yourself, man, I mean, other than maybe Maryland, but
sure.
You never watched a game and thought, boy, the offensive line just completely took over the game today. That's not the kind of observation you had with these guys. It's a little bit helter-skelter in terms of how these guys were put together. I mean, When you look at Farniok out at right tackle, I mean, I think most people look at him and say, you know what, there's a guy who really probably ought to be a guard.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Hymus, who is probably the best tackle out of that group that played all of last year. And he's a really solid guy. I mean, I think he's a guy who's got some NFL potential, but it's not like you're looking at Hymus and saying, hey, here's a guy who's going to be top 10, top 20 Outland candidates
sure.
at tackle. He's one of these guys who, you know, he could end up being kind of a late round draft pick, free agent signee. And if he gets with the right team and gets some time to develop, could end up being one of these guys like a Jeremiah Searles any one of these other number of Huskers that have kind of had a chance to kind of develop a little bit and then make a go of it in the NFL. And so then you get to the guard positions when you look at Hicks and you look at Bo Wilson. I think you've got a couple of guys who they're incredibly hardworking guys. I mean, if you look at Hicks, and you got a guy who's a walk-on out of Scott who worked his way into a starting job. It's pretty impressive. I mean, you got to at least be halfway decent to do that. Now, on the flip side, is that a guy when you're looking at Nebraska long term that, hey, there's guys who do that like Spencer Long who are All-Americans, And then there's guys like Trent Hickson. I don't know if Trent Hickson is going to be an NFL draft pick like Spencer Long was.
Sure. Rob,
I just don't think he's as good. And so, now you were asking there.
No, I was just going to say, Rob, you've hit on a couple of important points with the job security. And you've got Wilson's played a lot of football. Hickson busted his butt. And the consensus is Farniok's a guard. Okay, so you move Farniok in there. If you got a guy like Turner Corcoran that's make that Ben Hart. Corcoran's the kid out of Lawrence that looks nice.
Yeah,
but Ben Hart's my question.
They've talked about Corcoran having a chance to get in there. I think Ben Hart's got the better chance to step in at that right tackle spot.
Yeah. How hard is that? Because you got ready by what? You played a lot of football and got developed, but you by year what? Your redshirt sophomore year, were you seeing X number of snaps? Was it your junior year?
Redshirt freshman year. So I think if you look at it that sense, guys like myself, Sty, Wiegert, who are not full-time, but at least alternate starters as redshirt freshmen.
Okay.
And so I think that's I think those guys would be solid candidates for that. If a guy like Corcoran comes in and he's as good as people say he could be, maybe that guy steps in as a true freshman.
Wow.
I think Ben Hart's a guy, redshirt freshman, who got some playing time last year. I love that 4-game rule. I think that's the greatest thing ever. But you had a guy in Ben Hart who I think could step in and actually play and hold down that starting spot if they move Farniok inside. And then you've got Ethan Piper as well, too, that a lot of observers, a lot of guys who've watched practice think could really be a great offensive guard. And so you could have a guy like Bo Wilson who has essentially 2 years as a starting guard under his belt. It may not be a starter this year.
Yeah, so you have depth, and it comes down to your best five, and you project Hymus at the left. You got Juergens at center. You have Farniok on the right side.
The Juergens and Hymus are the two that I don't think you're going to supplant. I mean,
me neither. Yeah.
Juergens is kind of, you got a guy, if you want to know how thin depth was at center, you got a redshirt freshman tight end is your best start, is your best center on the team. So, but I thought he did some really, really good things. And I think he's a kid that they looked at him all of last year, even with kind of the sketchy snapping there for the first third of the season, they're looking at Juergens and thinking, hey, here's a guy that, you know what, the long-term upside of just leaving him in there and getting him that experience as the starter overshadows the inexperience, the bad snaps, et cetera. And so you're not going to see Juergens go anywhere. Hymus, I think, has that left tackle spot nailed down. I'll be curious to see what they do with Farniok. If they move him inside, I think you could see really a completely different lineup.
You could. I mean, let's go through it. You got Hymus, you got a left guard opening, you got Juergens, say you have Farniok at guard and then Ben Hart at tackle. You have names. I mean, you got a 6-year for Christian Gaylord. Brock Bando played his butt off when he got in. I think you're right about Ethan Piper. I think he could be a mauler for you at another guard spot. And then you got guys.
I think Piper's a guy who's almost maybe like a Juergens light, sort of one of those guys where, hey, maybe we stick this kid in as a redshirt freshman, and he's not going to be great right away. But if we put him in there and leave him in there and kind of take our lumps, maybe he will become very good. And so I'm really intrigued by him because I think from an athletic standpoint, he's one of the more athletic big men on that team.
Dr. Rob Zadisk is with us, Hale Varsity Radio, All-American at Nebraska, part of the Pipeline. And Could this line be great? Could it? I mean, that's what all Nebraska fans want. You, as a former lineman, want that. But when we list off the names, we talk about their skills and their ability, their athleticism, and some of the guys don't have a nice streak in them, which is good. You got all those components. Could the line be the best part of the offense here, not just in the spring but beyond?
I think so. I mean, that's an offense that has a huge number of questions. I mean, you've got some good skill position guys, but with Wandale and Adrian, but man, it's not deep. And all of a sudden, that wide receiver slot just all of a sudden that cupboard's looking a little bare again. I mean, you've got some question marks from a academic qualifying standpoint when you look at Betts coming out of Bellevue West. Manning, again, you kind of hear some kind of low-key rumors about if he's truly going to be qualified for this fall. And if you lose a guy like Manning, I think that was a guy they signed very specifically with the idea of here's a guy who's going to play right away. So your question opens up a whole nother run of questions of, God, we've got question marks all over this offense. I do think the offensive line, if they can find the right combo, I don't know if trying to just bring that exact same combo of guys that they had last year back is the best thing.
Sure.
When I think there may be a better overall lineup. And like I said in my head, with the little bit of practice I've watched, I keep coming back to having Ben Hart at right tackle and having Ethan Piper at one of the guard spots. I just think it gives you a better long-term projection for that line to be really solid. But, yeah, they could be a really strong part of the offense. It's just it's hard for me to say that with any degree of confidence when we're talking about, like, the big switch-ups that you're going to have.
Sure.
Or the big switch-ups they potentially could have with that lineup. So that's the thing. I'd like to say yes, but, again, man, I'm really leery, too.
Yeah, Rob, we got less than a minute here, but I got to ask you, what signs are you looking for as we get into spring ball that there's improvement along that offense line? What are you going to be watching for in the spring game?
I want to see a lineup early in spring, and I want to see them stick with it. And the reason I say that is because if you see that, that's going to give you a little bit of that confidence that the coaches have basically evaluated this and said, hey, you know what? Here's the best we've got. I don't mean that in the best of like, oh, well, I guess this is the best we got. It's, hey, we've got this lineup, and these guys are actually clicking, and they're working well together. That's what we're going to stick with, and this is the guys we're going to ride on going into the season. And so that's kind of what I'd love to see is if these guys have kind of a lineup in mind, they play around with it that first week, and then you want to see that lineup. You want to see him stick with that through the rest of the spring. That's what I'm looking for.
Rob Zadiska with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Husker great on the offensive line, part of the pipeline. You listen to his podcast, Husker Doc Talk. Check that out. I'm sure you and Travis will have something out. Rob, we'll do this again. We'll talk get closer to spring game and kind of for sure run you down after the spring. Thanks for a few minutes today.
Absolutely. You guys have a great afternoon.
You too. There he is, Dr. Rob Zadiska, part of the pipeline. Good to hear from him. Good thoughts on that O-line, and love what his eyes can tell us on that group on the offensive line.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
You've been wanting it. Here it is, a Sam Cook, Gordon Ramsay update. One of our favorite people, the pride of Seward, is Sam Cook. Great kicker for Baltimore. Wonderful Husker. So, Kranak, did you know that Sam Cook helped teach Gordon Ramsay how to punt in American football not long ago?
I had no clue about that, no.
Ramsay was a former soccer dude before he grabbed the chef outfit and started swearing at people.
Okay.
So you had Sam Cook a while back. I got to talk to Sam next week. I'm going to give him a shout. We'll get him on and get more info on this experience. But the Ravens kicker, Sam Cook, learned how to cook the perfect steak. Now, apparently, Sam Cook's meatloaf, Ma, meatloaf, is legendary.
Mm.
And they went, instead of meatloaf, Ramsey showed Cook how to do a steak. And every time, like, Ramsey does a steak, and I'll watch cooking shows, they do the pan, right? They do a pan.
Everybody does that, right? Like,
no,
to sear it.
I guess, but I don't. I just throw it on my grill, man. Top rack.
I'll do it both ways.
Okay.
There's pros and cons to each way.
I just like, just let me get it on the grill. Let me season it, and I'm good. I'll sear it on my grill, I guess.
See, that's my nice summer steak, but in the wintertime when it's cold out,
yeah.
There is some pros to having like garlic butter in the pan.
I won't do steak at home when it's wintertime.
I rarely do steak.
I don't have a pan really that's worth a damn.
Okay. Okay. Do it. Yeah, you get the cast iron. The cast iron going's nice for the nice sear.
Krainak, you don't do steak?
Not at home. My general rule of thumb is like if it's an expensive cut of meat,
you don't
want to
botch
that to the pros.
Right. Well, now Sam Cook, we can have Sam Cook on the patio and he can show us the right way to do a steak because he showed, you know, Gordon Ramsay how to kick a football.
I can do, but you know what I mean? Like burgers, cool. I think the most high end price, like ribs, mm-hmm. I'm comfortable messing with ribs. But like once you get into brisket territory.
Right.
I'm not dropping $35 on an experiment. You know? It's like, I'm not dropping $35.
Krainak, you need to have no fear of failure here, brother.
Stop it.
That's half the fun of cooking, though, is being able to mess it up one time and then go fix it. And it turns out better the second time around. And it's that feeling of satisfaction, right?
And I'm good with that with, like, chili, for instance.
Well, Krainak, I mean, your chili's undefeated. I mean, you got your name all over different parts of O Street for some reasons, and you got your name all over different parts of O Street for the reason of being a world champion chili maker.
Look, and that is fine because you're dealing with what? Ground beef that's $5 a pound?
Sure.
A little bit different than brisket that's $19.99 a pound.
Again, the fear of failure part.
Well, or whatever it is.
The investment part.
$19.99.
I like it. We'll get Vogue's take here on steak. Because Vogue's is damn fine at barbecuing and doing steak. But, yep, Sammy Cook, good for him, man. That's outstanding. We'll get some spring football thoughts from Brandon Vogel as the managing editor of Hail Varsity Radio's coming up here in about 10 minutes. The Iron Horse is Gary Sharp. It is championship Saturday. If you're on your way down to Pinnacle Bank Arena, enjoy that. So many girls have fought hard for a tough season, and you have it culminate today.
The Battle of A Street.
We will have Pius and East for the girls' title tonight at 7. Myself and Coach Tim Berta excited about that. Great ball games and just getting it kicked off for the madness as you have boys' state next week. Hour 2, weekend edition. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Krainak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to an hour two of Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Krainak, Elijah Herbel. We say hi to Brandon Vogel from HailVarsity.com and magazine, managing editor, author, Dream Like a Champion with John Cook. And you follow Vogue's on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel. Vogue's, how do you do a steak? We were ending the first hour when Sam Cook got to sit down with Gordon Ramsay. Sam taught Gordon how to kick a football. And Gordon said, all right, Sam, I'm going to show you how the best way to do a steak. I would have put money down, and I would still put money down. And that Sammy Cook's okay with meatloaf. That's world famous, apparently. But he's being a Nebraska kid, he's probably pretty good with steak, but Ramsey showed him some pointers.
He did, and my preferred method is not entirely different than what they did in that video. I sous vide my steaks now almost exclusively. So that really allows you to dial it in to the degree. So whether you're a rare guy or, God forbid, well done.
God forbid is right.
you can cook it perfectly to that temperature to water bath for about an hour, and then you get the cast iron skillet, like screaming hot, 500 some degrees. Sear it for about 2 minutes on both sides, and you're also do the butter baste and with some garlic and thyme in the pan, and you're pretty much good to go. It's almost foolproof in my experience.
We were talking about that last night with some buddies about this you almost boil it, right?
Yeah, so I mean, it's sous vide. It used to be a very fancy cooking thing like 12 years ago, and now there are wands for about $100 that home cooks can use, and it's just a water bath. And so for a steak, you might set it to, 129 degrees if you like it medium rare. You can either vacuum seal a bag or just use Ziploc bags if you get all the air out of it. And let it sit in there for an hour. It brings the whole thing up to exactly that temperature. And all you have to do from there is like the good bits, which is get some caramelization on there.
Man, that is impressive. Might have to try that. I may be converted.
Really fast, Brandon, what's the cut of choice? Which steak are you going for?
Ribeye, usually. I mean, if you're going to go all out and celebrate and go to a steakhouse, maybe you get the even bigger one. You go with the porterhouse or go with the full-on T-bone. But if I'm cooking at home, I'll just look for a pretty nice ribeye bone-on, if possible.
Crane Akenvogs, does it make me a wuss if I'm a filet guy?
No, you just like... You like high society.
Vogues didn't say anything. He just scoffed. Kranach's like, I'm not going to throw you under the bus publicly.
It's high. You like high society at that point. That's well, who what that's saying.
Who didn't subscribe? Oh, hold on.
The funny thing about this is there's David Chang, famous sort of chef, has a new season, and I'm not paid. I'm not a paid show for this, but I was just watching it last night, the new show on Netflix called Ugly Delicious. And there is an episode specifically about steak where they talk about kind of like, okay, what does it say if you're a ribeye person versus a filet person? And what does it say if you're, a medium rare guy versus medium well? It's worth watching.
Okay. I think you got to be medium rare. And if you use, I'm salt and pepper, and I will blacken my steak with some Cajun seasonings or a beef rub. That said, if I'm sorry, man, but if you use sauce on your steak, we got to talk.
Wrong. You're wrong.
You can't do ketchup. You can't do 57. You can't do A1. I mean, nothing against the condiments. God love you, but I just can't get with that. We were at a buddy's house a week ago on Sunday, and incredible steaks, phenomenal treatment. Jay Bird, shout out to you. But about half the table said, you got some A1 or 57. I got up, grabbed my plate, said, you savages, and I went and ate by myself.
Stop.
I dipped it in
that dirt.
I had to go. Vogues, you got a story here up that Derek Peterson crushed. It's an update, and I have been beat over the head with the coronavirus over on KFOR in the mornings, because we report it, we got to talk about it, and I kind of roll my eyes at it. Not that it's not serious, I just I'm invincible, right? I'm young and stupid, but you have a lot of sporting events reacting to this, and Dr. Petey, Derek Peterson, had a chance to get caught up with Bill Moos. Some pretty good stuff.
Yeah, he did, and that was one of the topics that came up. He had that interview maybe even a week or two ago. Probably isn't a topic, but it's one of those things where you have to kind of have a contingency plan in place specifically because we're seeing all of these other basically sporting events do that. Like Serie A, the biggest soccer league in Italy, is playing games with no fans in attendance until April. And from there, it's kind of TBD. They're talking about the Olympics, about the potential for having to hold back in front of no fans, you know, and that's this summer. And the Olympics are a big deal always to whatever country hosts it, but it's a really big deal to Japan. Like they start preparations way out in advance and kind of use it as a chance to implement a lot of new sort of civic structures that they want to do anyway. And, you know, there's a good and a bad with that. But so like, if they're talking about that, the NCAA, you know, has to have a plan in place for the women's and men's basketball tournaments. So it may sound crazy at first to be like, hey, do we have to talk about playing some of these events in front of empty stadiums? But everyone's in kind of a wait and see mode. Nebraska's having those discussions. We know based on Derek's story, and Moose did say at this point, the plan there is that is not the plan to play a spring game in an empty stadium, but you know, they're still in kind of the process of fact finding. And it's just interesting to think about if it's one of those things you have to contingency plan for.
Yeah. And well, and then if a player or two contracts it, like they're not going to share the same locker room, right? You know, like it could affect, depending on how it could affect just spring ball period, let alone the spring game.
Yeah, and, you know, you think about, so if that becomes the case, if Nebraska has to have a spring game with no fans, or if even, like, you know, people aren't willing to come out, that's kind of one of the crown jewels of Nebraska's entire recruiting plan. Does that alter that? And, I mean, I know all of this stuff is, like, way down the list of importance compared to, you know, people contracting this. And kind of the crisis on that front, but it just, you know, it touches on everything really when you start to get into it, and it's no surprise the sports is one of them.
So is it in bad form if, and I'm kind of half serious, but you got the clear bag policy, you got to shell out some cake to get the clear bag, and I know you're not supposed to, these masks aren't effective, but may you see Nebraskans with the big red N on the mask they wear to the spring game?
God dang it.
Well, I mean,
is that in poor taste to sell for $3?
To sell, for sure. Yeah. You know, I guess if you wanted to talk about potential giveaway. Maybe,
okay.
Maybe
thank you, Vogues, for correcting me.
Oh, man. Get your Husker hand sanitizer. Like, yeah. Actually, I mean, yeah, there could be a pretty big market out here.
Well, the people over 70 are the most susceptible. Would it be wrong to just ban them from the stadium for the
wow.
game? Wow. Would that be wrong?
That's a little ageist.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's a hard no.
On that. A little ageist.
Vogues, some thoughts from you on spring football as we move from coronavirus discussions. It's got to happen, and Moose and the university are on top of it, too. Topics du jour, and that is, okay, who's playing at the guard spots? What's the interior line going to look like? How about the wide receiver position? And, oh, yeah, Spielman's back home in Minnesota. Pretty busy week. Are you anticipating some answers Monday from Coach Frost on a lot of these things?
Yeah, I am. I think it'll be a pretty interesting kind of spring opening press conference. You know, specifically because Nebraska didn't add anybody in the sort of the January, February signing period. So the last time kind of the media has had access to Frost for a, you know, 30-minute kind of press conference setting was in December. And a lot's happened from there. But, I mean, I also think, you know, aside from addressing kind of the legitimate news items, you know, a J.D. Spielman taking a leave from the team, temporary or not, the addition of a new offensive coordinator. That's a pretty big deal. So there's all of that stuff. And then you'll get in, you know, I think to a little bit of the nuts and bolts of spring football. It's going to be an interesting one. You know, we obviously have three quarterbacks we know are capable of playing. To what degree that's going to be a competition, I'll be interested to see. I'll also be interested to see, you know, the hope last time we kind of spoke to Coach Ross was that Adrian would be ready to go. They anticipated that, so is he. And you've got these other things like, okay, wide receiver, all of a sudden you're kind of bare bones in terms of the complement of scholarship guys you have on hand. Running back, you've got two, assuming Ronald Tompkins is still working his way back from injury. So offense, which was kind of the sure end of the equation for Nebraska even a month ago, it's going to be a little bit interesting throughout the spring. And then, of course, over on the defensive side, you get a ton of potential position battles, almost a clean slate there with at a lot of positions.
And Brandon, we were talking a little bit about this on Twitter, where, you know, 59% of Nebraska's classes from 16, 17, and 18 would be your upperclassmen right now. 59% of those signees are just not on the roster anymore, whether it's from graduation, transferring, quitting, whatever. They're just not here. So that's part of it. That leads into exactly what you're talking about, which is you only got like two running backs and you got four wide receivers, because it's the skill positions in particular. I haven't run the numbers on it, but the skill positions in particular have been hammered by attrition. Hammered. It creates such an interesting scenario to where if you think Nebraska is a developmental program, which I think most of us do, like that's how you're going to succeed. I mean, it's going to be a couple years, right? Like this, any talk of year two or year three is sort of like, no, because you just literally don't have enough human beings filling scholarships on the roster to make that happen.
Yeah. It certainly doesn't increase their odds. You know, for Nebraska to take a big jump, you would need a handful of guys who we haven't seen a ton from yet, be they new arrivals in the 2020 class or just guys who have been behind maybe some of the upperclassmen that were around for a year or two, talking like redshirt freshmen at this point. Somebody like Braxton Clark would be one. You would need guys like that to really be better than they've shown, which isn't a knock against them. I just mean we haven't seen a lot, so it's hard to project, oh, this guy's a future all-conference caliber player, or you haven't seen it all. And the likelihood of that isn't great. So that's kind of what you're looking at. You know, you look at kind of the guys that are left from that 2017 class, so guys who could theoretically be seniors or are seniors if they're still here. And almost everyone that's in that group that didn't leave is pretty much a starter or a contributor. So yeah, it kind of shows you, yeah, just what you're missing when guys like that leave. And this is kind of, you know, Mark and I have been talking about it with some Husker fans on Twitter, you know, kind of a trait of Nebraska's. And then you add the transfer portal in. You add a coaching change in there, which always, you know, I have a graph going back to 2003 of kind of the four-year rolling average for Nebraska's attrition rate. And you can see spikes every time Nebraska makes a coaching change. It's just, that's what happens. Guys weren't recruited by that staff, or they don't mesh with them and they end up leaving. But it certainly seemed to have been a little bit elevated. And when you drill down to the impact on skill position specifically, then you kind of really get into what a tough stretch it's been for Nebraska on that front.
Brandon Vogel's joining us on a weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, there's still a lot of talent here though in this program right now. As we are getting into spring practices, where do you think, which position group, I guess I should say, do you think are we going to see the most competition this spring and summer?
Yeah, I would say secondary, but I might hold on that until next week. You know, you've got a handful. So you've got some established guys there when you think about DeCaprio Boodle, Deontay Williams, Markell Dismuke, and then Braxton Clark is probably, if you had to pencil out a depth chart, you'd probably put him number one. Oh, and Cam Taylor Brick. You know, so really you've got five that you kind of got to figure out how that snaps together. But then there's this fleet of young guys behind them that I think are really intriguing. That said, a lot of them are coming off of injuries last year, you know, guys like Noah Pillow-Gates. So how ready are those guys? That might limit how much competition is there. But there's still that open cornerback spot, presumably, where Lamar Jackson played last year, that you got some guys who should be in for that. I think linebacker could be too. You've got a handful, a group of guys there battling for just a couple spots, presumably. So that one should be pretty good to watch. You know, it's just, it's tough. And for the second year in a row, Nebraska, I think running back's really a key spot. Getting Nebraska's running game back up and running to the degree that it was in 2018 is vital, I think, for this program's success. And you're not going to get a great look at it, I don't think, in the spring. You know, last year you had a couple of walk-ons who took the majority of the carries in the spring game because it's just, it's all Nebraska had. So it's going to be a little bit tough in that regard, not getting a great look at the running game beyond Ramir Johnson. It'll be our best and most extended look at him.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio as we look at Nebraska football starting spring practice on Monday. Yeah, getting the running game going is certainly interesting. And you do wonder, considering all these unknowns, like you just don't know at this point how ready Omar Manning or Xavier Betts might be at receiver. I don't know about Sevion Morrison or the kid out of Florida. I always forget his name.
Scott.
Yeah, Marvin Scott. Just don't know. You have so many unknowns. But it feels like tight end, even though we say it, I don't know, every year for the last 15 years, it feels like you got some dudes at tight end. Like if you're to believe that Vocalek's going to be the real deal, you've seen what Stoll can do. You know Austin Allen can catch a ball. I'm just wondering if you might see a short-term shift in Nebraska's attack, I guess their strategy of attack, to where maybe they're more quarterback run heavy or tight end throws or maybe keeping things more compact. I guess
because talking you don't double
have
tights,
your full arsenal,
double yeah. tights, yeah,
right. I'm just wondering. Do you think you could see that? Just a shift based on the known commodities you have at Nebraska right now.
I think so. You know, tight end when you start to look at it might be one of the deepest spots on the team. I wrote a little bit about Nebraska's returners from a predicted points added perspective, which is, you know, it sounds fancy, but it's really not. And Austin Allen, you know, in limited touches was kind of a guy I've circled as, okay, this is interesting. Like his performance, you know, again, very small sample size, but is encouraging. Jack Stoll, you feel like a pretty known commodity. Vocalek, I think we'll see what he ends up being, but he kind of gives you that classic inline option. But guys like Allen and Rafdahl, and especially Chris Hickman, you know, you might see them kind of line up all over because they're big enough to be that H-back role and get in there and block. But also kind of a matchup problem if you want to split them out and athletic enough to the point where you're, you know, you don't feel bad about necessarily taking a wide receiver off the field with some of those guys, Hickman in particular. I mean, last year, you know, his limited number of snaps while maintaining a red shirt, we saw him out there and he's kind of, he was encouraging as a blocker specifically, which if you look at this kind of, so you lump tight ends with wide receivers, this kind of pass catching group as a whole. And you add Lubick into the mix too, but I don't think this part is going to change. Like if you can block, there's going to be a way for you to find the field. You know, the other part about it is, So Spielman's out. He was a little bit of a security blanket at times last year. But even with that, Wanda Robinson had a really, really heavy load when you add his rushing in there. And I think as good as he was, he probably wasn't as good as he could have been because Nebraska had to use him that way. So, you know, that's another part where this all kind of snaps together with running back. But, yeah, in terms of tight ends, I would be surprised if we didn't see multiple guys on the field most of the time in 2020.
It's Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine author, Dream Like a Champion. Follow him on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel and reach out to him for steak advice on top of all your Husker needs. Vogue's awesome chat. Thanks for getting us kicked off for spring 2020. We'll get caught up again next week. Always appreciate your time, bud.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
There he is.
Thank you, Brandon.
Boiling a steak. bang.
Yeah, the sous vide thing, I've heard quite a bit about that. I have not tried it myself, but everybody swears by it.
My dad actually just ordered one on Amazon. It's in the mail right now.
Like the kit?
Yeah, it's this big tub you put water in.
Right.
Yeah, and then it's like this little machine you put just right in the side and just circulates the water, keeps it all that consistent temperature.
Might have to try that.
I heard you can kind of go like all in one, so you can throw like potatoes in a bag and throw it in the sous vide while your steak's going, and then you pull it all at the same time and it's all done.
Yeah, sous vide's a whole thing, man. It's ready to go. It's and everything you cook in there is super tender because it's all moist and
You got to get the crisp though on it with the searing.
Well, that's the key. Yeah,
got to do it. Got to fire the grill up for that or the pan. Gary Sharp, the Iron Horse, will maybe continue the steak conversation, but more spring football thoughts as we move forward. Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out. Excellent strategy, sir.
Back with your weekend edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak. The word is we're not losing an hour of sleep. We're gaining an hour of football season as you spring forward. Welcome in the Iron Horse is Gary Sharp. Sharpie, what's up, man? How are you?
Schmitty, how are you? Good Saturday. Feels like spring weather outside. Big day of basketball. It's all good.
It is
good. By the way, Gary, did you hear about J.D. Spielman?
Yes. Yeah. I heard about him.
Yeah. Well, follow up, Kranak. I mean, you just broke news.
Yeah. So now that we're on the topic, what do you think?
I think that it'll give the opportunity for some other wide receivers to get a lot of reps during spring ball.
That we'll never see again in the fall.
Not necessarily. Like a guy like Alonte Brown, who I think we were all, before JD stepped away from the program, we were all very intrigued, and he was going to get a lot of usage. He's kind of a Swiss Army knife, I think, on offense. But this is a great opportunity for a guy like Demarion Houston to step up. And you have to. If you're looking at probably two or three of your better wide receivers that you're anticipating in the fall are going to show up in the summer, and this is your opportunity, and I'm chomping at the bit to have as many passes thrown my way and to get it into the front of the line to run as many reps as possible. But I think those are two guys that I'm pretty intrigued by. It is what it is. You know, I think even with J.D. Spielman here, Nebraska always going to be down wide receivers. They knew what was coming in the summer. If you can just make it through the spring, no major injuries, and have some progress with the guys that are here, then I think you feel okay once you turn the page and you get past the 18th of April.
Gary Sharp's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Gary, a lot of spring storylines. You touched on the wideouts and the opportunity with four scholarship guys here. You've got a slew of talent that's supposed to be here this summer at the wide receiver room and running back, frankly. Let's go to quarterback, because that's one main thing that will be discussed and asked about, and, you know, a topic of conversation on Monday. What's your insight right now with Adrian from a health standpoint and just from a readiness? Because the competition should be pretty good. You've got a good quarterback room. You know, what Adrian does Nebraska see this spring?
Well, I think you see a guy that's edgy. I think you see a guy that is not as big as he was last summer and into the season. I think you see a guy that has a healthy left shoulder. I think you see a guy who has probably started to have his confidence built back up again. Now, what does all that mean before he gets on the field or plays a game? You know, that remains to be seen. But this is the first time in his career, I bet in his football career, the possibility of him losing the starting quarterback job is real. And so we'll see what that does to him. But, you know, he's the number one guy until he proves that he's not the number one guy, in my opinion. But I think you're going to see an edgy Adrian Martinez. But then there's the part that he's got to get better at the quarterback stuff, whether it be reads, whether it be the deep ball, just playing simple pitch and catch, and also erasing the memory of struggles last year. Now, can he be helped by a new offensive coordinator, some different kind of wide receivers? We don't know. And that's why spring will be a little interesting, because you don't have You know, you don't have a lot of running backs to hand the ball off to. You don't have a lot of wide receivers to hand the ball off to. But one area where I think if we're saying, hey, can you play pitch and catch, that's a deep tight end room that I think you'll see a lot of targets in the spring. But I expect to see an Adrian Martinez that's got a little chip on his shoulder. That also is like, hey, this is still my job, and I'm gonna be out to win it. But essentially, it's a two-man race between him and McCaffrey. But with that said, this is an important spring for McCaffrey as well as a quarterback, because he has to continue to develop and be better at a quarterback position when it's not a designed set of plays for you. When you're in a quarterback, you have the whole playbook to your disposal. So it's an opportunity to either show you can handle it, or you still struggle when you have the whole playbook instead of the select plays they had for him when he was playing quarterback last fall.
Do you think there's a scenario in which, because of the numbers, yes, you McCaffrey's here to play quarterback, right? That much is we know that. But at the same time, you know, in the heat of the battle, you sort of have to do what you have to do, right? Do you see a scenario in which he does get more reps as a kind of Swiss Army knife type, like you were mentioning with Alante Brown, where you get him the ball in some end arounds, you throw him some screens, things like that? Do you think he'll be more involved even if he's not the starter at quarterback?
Well, I think he's the kind of athlete that can do a lot of different things for you. And your main objective is to win and to put the best people on the field to help you do that. I think it'd be tough here in the spring to say, all right, Luke, there's a quarterback competition and you're right in the mix. But oh, by the way, can you spend half your time playing wide receiver? I think that's an interesting conversation to have. But I think if you went to Luke McCaffrey and said, hey, we need you in the spring to add some wide receiver, he'd say definitely, because I just want to be on the field. I think it's more of a Chris Hickman maybe seeing it wide receiver than a Luke McCaffrey. But right now, when you don't have that many guys that can catch balls and you don't, you know, hamstrings could come up, that kind of stuff during spring, who knows what will happen. But I think for right now, I would keep McCaffrey in there to say, hey, we believe in you as a quarterback. We said that there would be a quarterback competition. We want you to be able to have the full allotment of time to compete for that job and not be splitting your time.
Gary Sharps with us, Hail Varsity Radio, the Iron Horse, joining us. Some spring preview going on. Want to go over to the defensive side of the ball and start with the front three. Ben Stilley's been here a long time. Great effort guy. Had a good spring a year ago. Didn't have a bad year, but wasn't as loud as maybe we thought it could be. You're replacing a ton of production up front. At the nose spot, of course, Keem Green needs to have a good spring. Is Damian going to make that step forward? He's had a lot of time to watch. He's been effective at times throughout his career. What can he do? And then DeAndre Thomas, a guy that's changed his body. Sharpie, how do you think the fit is right now with what Nebraska has on the interior? You look at the Davis twins, and they were more 4-3 guys that played their best and gave their all, I should say, in a 3-4. But do you think the fit is there for that front for Nebraska moving forward with Coach Chenander? Do they have good candidates to step up and be better?
Well, I think that on the nose, you can find some guys that can do what you're supposed to do, and that's clog it up and mm-hmm. be a four-hand guy. I think you want more than a four-hand guy, somebody that can disrupt right in the middle of the line of scrimmage. You know, I think Nebraska is still trying to find the way. I'm glad you brought up DeAndre Thomas, too. I'm very curious to see him. He's remade his body a little bit. He really had a good season last year where he didn't get on the field as much mm-hmm. as maybe we thought. So it's kind of go time for him. You know, can Darian Daniels give you more than 5 to 10 plays at a time? Can he give you 35, 40 plays during a game, depending on his conditioning? There's a bunch of wild cards along there. And don't forget about the junior college guys that are coming as well. Guy like Jordan Riley could come in and make some headway right away. But Keem Green, I think, is pretty important. You know, he didn't get on the field a lot. He was late getting here. We're intrigued by him because of the whole recruiting and who was interested in him. I think he's a guy that if we're talking about his name on April 18th and he's going to be in the mix to play on that defensive line come September 5th, I think that's a really, really good sign. But if I'm Tony Tuioti, I mean, the door is wide open for somebody to grab it. And also, you mentioned Ben Stilley. This is another opportunity for him to take that next step. He's played a lot of football in Nebraska, but now it's time. You know, this is his go time. This is the end of his career. So that's a position where you're not real comfortable with, but you're very intrigued by the amount of bodies and what they look like and where they come from.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Gary, looking at the, you know, it was with J.D. Spielman that kind of crunched the numbers on this. Between the 16, 17, and 18 recruiting classes, 59% of those players are no longer in the zip code. They left for one reason or another. So you only have 27 players across those three classes that are still on the roster right now. Are you on the side of that is worth watching, that is a concern, or that is just a short-term cost of doing business, house has been cleaned now, nothing to worry about?
So, first of all, that was a great tweet by you and some great information, and that's the stark reality of where Nebraska football kind of not only is at right now, but where they've been, where you see classes that don't make it to the second or the third year, even to get through a 4 or 5 year career. I think, you know, people are, J.D. Spielman departs, and I'm in the camp that he's not coming back. So you've got to adjust. But, and people are like, well, oh, all right, Scott Frost, 9-15. It's year number 3. This program hasn't been to a bowl game in a long time. You got that daunting schedule. You're probably going to be fourth in the preseason. If I'm Scott Frost, I'm very excited about Monday to get here and start, because I'm okay. I'm okay with this because I have done this. This is what I want to do. I want to clean house, to get the people in here that believe in what we're doing. And I've been able to hold my 19 class together, and I like where I'm going with my 20 class. And those are my two classes that I'm going to be able to reverse this trend of Nebraska. And so all the excuses are out, guys. I mean, anybody about buying into the culture and stuff, they've probably been taken out of the program. So now, even though you're depleted in spots, these are your people. This is your message that has been received, and guys are on board with you. And now it's go time. I'm looking forward to, because there should be no more excuses. You know, the only thing that will ail Nebraska is things that you do to yourself, whether you're not talented enough on the field with players, or you're not very good in coaching and developing. Because now it's all that's been erased. So that's why I'm very interested and kind of encouraged and excited about 2020, because it's done. It's over. Maybe a few more guys will be processed out. But for the most part, this is who you are right now. This is who your program is. This is who you want to be in.
Sharpie, Krenak, had a money tweet, and we talked about this in the first hour. And when you clean house, and you need to have people around to be able to develop, right? And that's a reality. Touch on your view on the Nebraska program, if you can, as you go into year three, and then kind of look at what Minnesota did, because Fleck played a lot of young kids. That's all he talked about when he sat down with you and he sat down with me, was going into this last season, their year three, about how young they were and how many freshmen they played and how many redshirt freshmen they played. And their schedule was really nice last year, and they also took care of business, so there's credit to them. But just the difference here, how, all right, it's worked so far for Minnesota. They turned the roster over. Fleck went out and recruited and evaluated and got guys in, and they played good football. And, you know, it happened for them in year three. What can Nebraska look like? Now, I think it's a completely different situation that Frost walked into versus what Fleck went into with kind of that Jerry Kill foundation.
Well, one, you know, I think one thing that helped Minnesota last year, it's not like guys that kind of turned the corner and they bought in. They had a lot of talent in their program, and they still have a considerable amount of talent. They also were benefited by good, consistent, winning quarterback play last year. First and foremost, that's what Nebraska needs, whether it be Adrian Martinez, Luke McCaffrey, or whoever. They need consistent, winning quarterback play, because that can cure a lot of your ails and help you grow as a team. They did take advantage of a schedule. But they also, this is the next step for Nebraska, among many others, is Minnesota learned how to win close games. You remember there was a lot of discussion about, oh, wow, they took Georgia Southern, South Dakota State, all the way to the fourth quarter. How come they're not blowing them out? Well, they learned how to win close games. That's what still hurts Nebraska, is look at Scott's record in one-possession games. Nebraska doesn't have a good record in the last 2 years. That's the next step. Learn how to win those kind of games. I think at some point during the spring, I wouldn't be surprised to hear Scott say this is the best staff he's had at Nebraska. Now, albeit it's just the third year, but I think this is the best staff. I think that also benefits him. But, you know, when people will do the comparison, a lot of people around the country to go, okay, Fleck went year three to year four. Remember, last year also in Minnesota, nobody was talking about them. They were sick.
Sure.
There won't be a lot of people talking about Nebraska in the offseason. They'll probably be fourth in their own division. So all of these factors could play into how Nebraska approaches it. But I expected guys during spring to be very businesslike, to be very matter-of-fact. And I think they're very cognizant of what everybody else thinks is, hey, show me. I don't want to hear any hype. Show me. Get me to September 5th. Let me see a result on the field against Purdue. I think players are the same way. You know what? We think we know what we have here and we're growing, but we're going to keep it in-house and we're just going to show it. So I think it'd be very, very businesslike throughout spring and a lot of the interaction between coaches and players with the media.
Now, Gary, you're not a doctor, but I'll let you play one on the radio here. Just being
Thank
around
you.
Division I athletics as often as you are, how much is coronavirus starting to like increase in discussions, and do you expect it to start impacting American sports here in the shorter medium term?
Well, I think the key word is all these organizations, whether it be the NCAA or the professional leagues, they are prepared. But when you hear yesterday that the NBA has alerted their team to be prepared to have games without people in the arena, you know, that's something that starts to hit you a little bit more. I know in basketball, you know, people are saying, hey, don't do the post-game handshakes. But what about the 40 minutes of basketball that you're playing where you've got guys sweating on each other, they're sharing the same basketball, that kind of stuff. But I think being prepared, but we're seeing it in other places in this world that they're holding sports events with nobody in the stands. I mean, can you imagine a March Madness where, for example, the first two rounds are in Omaha, where it's just eight teams playing and there's nobody else in the gym except for important personnel? I mean, that's when it really hits you how serious this is. But I think at this point, everybody being prepared and having a discussion point is the most important thing. And, you know, well, just imagine playing in an important game like the NCAA tournament and there is nobody in the stands, how awkward that would be. We've seen games that have been played where there's nobody in the stands, like the Orioles and the White Sox played a baseball game at Camden Yards a few years back. There have been, like, high school games in inner cities where they're worried about violence, so the only people in the gym are the teams playing. But on that stage of March Madness, wow, that would really hit you that we've gone to a serious level in this country.
Gary Sharp's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, great stuff as always. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning. We'll catch up with you next week. Always appreciate your insight, man.
Thanks, guys. I can't believe it. Spring football is already here.
I can't wait. Good stuff.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. There he is. The Iron Horse. Gary Sharp with us this morning on Hail Varsity Radio. Elijah will get the podcast up in short order. HailVarsity.com. Or iTunes, go ahead and subscribe to it. Doesn't cost anything. Take us with, and you'll love it. Appreciate you doing that. Also, get a subscription in. It is spring, no time like now to take advantage of Hail Varsity and how affordable it is. Get the magazine, get the digital premium content, bundle it up. You can log on and subscribe, HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Real easy to do, doesn't cost you much. And you'll be smiling about all your Husker coverage. A quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday next.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
Championship Saturday reminder, Jeff Moat's going to be on the call at 11 o'clock. Lincoln Christian goes to cut those nets down at Pinnacle Bank Arena. I'll have Pius and Lincoln East tonight, Girls State. Class A title game, 6:30 ESPN Lincoln, ESPNLincoln.com. That's where you'll hear that. And a reminder about drinking and driving. One out of three fatal crashes involves an impaired driver. Drunk driving, buzzed, or high driving, never acceptable. And law enforcement officers out around the clock to stop with sobriety checkpoints and saturation patrols as a driver. Make that correct choice of a non-alcoholic drink or have a pre-selected designated driver. Be smart. Start the conversation. Who's driving home? Brought to you by the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. Kranach, Elijah, where do I go get this steak boiler thing we're talking about?
Probably Amazon. They have everything, right?
Yeah, but if I don't want to, like, jack around online and I want to physically go somewhere. Do I have to go? Do I have to go Frank the Tank and go to Bed Bath and Beyond or something like that?
I bet you that would be a spot you could do it.
I need a cast iron skillet too.
I don't know if Walmart would be there be the spot for that.
I think you could probably get a cast iron skillet at Walmart.
Yeah,
those don't have to be all that expensive. It's just cast iron, but I'm not sure about a sous vide cooker.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're all in.
I want to try it, but I am pretty confident in my steak grilling abilities. Screw that up.
See, whenever my dad gets his, I'll go over there and I'll send you a review. I'll get a couple pictures of the steak. I'll give you my best review and I'll let you know if it's worth it or not.
See, and the searing part's awesome, but what I love doing, man, is just doing a little olive oil, kosher salt, black pepper. Maybe if I'm feeling a little Cajun, a little blackened seasoning, or just go salt and pepper. And it's either two cocktails or two beers, and then the steak's done. You let it rest, and it's perfect medium rare.
Mm-hmm. See, the only thing I'll add to that is I'll go salt, pepper, and I'll do a little bit of garlic powder on this steak,
garlic
too.
Garlic powder's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Kranach, do you do the butter?
No. Well, I really don't do steak. Like, it has been a long time since I've grilled a whole steak.
You're right. You like you say, you leave it. You got to come to the patio, all right? And I'll do a steak for you.
I leave the expensive meats to the pros. The approachable, like economical meats, I will cook the hell out of.
Well, we need some Kranach chili. That's good.
There you go.
All right. Have a good weekend, Kranach. Thanks again, brother.
You as well, sir.
All right. Talk to you Monday at 4 Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. See you.